You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
As with our Hebrews passage last week, when you really take a close look at the themes and vocabulary of Ephesians, it's clear that Paul didn't write it, despite what the letter's title might say in your Bible. Someone within the church of Ephesus itself, probably several generations after Paul, set out to write a letter to pull everybody together, and for extra gravitas, wrote it as if Paul himself had written it to them. Now, I can't prove this, but I suspect that there was no one in the church at Ephesus who thought this letter was actually from Paul. They knew very well that Wanda and Apollo had written it. It was only later generations that missed the artistic conceit and started to claim this letter as actually being from Paul. But regardless of who wrote it, the author encourages readers to not dwell on their differences in the original context between Jewish Christians and Gentile Christians, but to celebrate that we are all in this together with Christ as the cornerstone. The metaphor used is that of a new temple, seeing that, historically speaking, the old temple in Jerusalem had been destroyed by Roman troops in 70 of the Common Era. This is a new spiritual organism. The community of faith itself is becoming a holy temple. And even though this text is primarily focused on the communal identity of the church, listen for how the author reminds the hearers that each believer is being built spiritually into a dwelling place for God.
Our words of wisdom are from Ephesians chapter 2, verses 14 through 22. For Christ is our peace. In his flesh, he has made both groups into one and has broken down the dividing wall. That is, the hostility between us. He has abolished the law with its commandments and ordinances, that he might create in himself one new humanity in place of the two, thus making peace, and might reconcile both groups to God in one body through the cross, thus putting to death that hostility through it.
So he came and proclaimed peace to you who were far off, and peace to those who were near. For through him, both of us have access in one spirit to the Father. So then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are citizens with the saints and also members of the household of God, built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the cornerstone.
In him, the whole structure is joined together and grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are built together spiritually into a dwelling place for God. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
A rabbi in an isolated village heard that one of his congregants was going around announcing that he would no longer attend services. He was advancing the familiar argument that he could commune just as easily with God out in the natural setting of the fields. The rabbi went to pay a visit to the reluctant member of his flock. They sat in front of the fireplace making small talk, but studiously avoided the subject of attending Shabbat services. After some time, the rabbi took the tongs from the rack next to the fireplace and pulled a single coal from the fire. He placed the glowing ember on the hearth. The two men watched silently as the coal quickly ceased burning and turned an ashen gray, while the other coals in the fire continued to burn brightly. The rabbi didn't need to say a thing. The man said, "I'll see you at the next Shabbat service." No one can be fully human alone. Survive maybe, yes, but not thrive. The isolation of the pandemic has brought that home to us in visceral ways. As human beings, we need one another. But more than that, we are inextricably linked together, whether we like it or not. But despite what we've experienced the last couple of years, the idea of being interconnected with one another isn't the most popular notion in our culture. There are some who idolize the selfishness of an Ayn Rand, for instance, and have made it an article of faith that they are the lone mastermind of their success and that their personal happiness is the ultimate manifestation of creation's very existence. And this idea isn't new. Jesus was up against a version of it in his own day. The authorities didn't kill Jesus because he was sitting on a hillside strumming his guitar, singing Kumbaya. Jesus was executed because he was a threat to the status quo, a power structure that exploited common people for the enrichment of the empire and the elites at the top. Jesus' teachings threatened to empower peasants so they could see their worth as human beings and their strength in community. He was taking cold, crippled coals and putting them back on the fire. And that was a fire that the powers that be did not want stoked. That same phenomenon occurred over the course of many years in apartheid South Africa. The minority white population was able to oppress and exploit the majority black population by denying them basic human rights and keeping them in a constant state of fear. But visionaries like Nelson Mandela and later Desmond Tutu were able to convince the otherwise defeated blacks that they were people of worth and dignity. Doing that, they managed to overthrow the system that kept them enslaved. The origin of this movement has its roots deep in African wisdom, a way of thinking that has come to be called Ubuntu. Bishop Tutu used to take great joy in pronouncing it Ubuntu. It's a Bantu word that's hard to translate straight into one English word because it expresses a complex idea of humanity, more so because it's a mindset that has been beaten out of most Westerners. In one word, it acknowledges the essence of being itself and is probably best grasped in the phrase, I am because we are. It's not just about being conscious of our duty to neighbor. It takes it to the next level of being conscious of one's personal rights only in relationship with the rights of others. It's understanding our identity only in relationship with others. Every person depends on other persons to be a whole person. It seems so simple, but it's not, because it emphasizes a communal and spiritual dimension of human identity that challenges the Western mindset of thinking of oneself as an individual. It's like trying to make a fish understand that it's wet. It just takes being wet for granted. But take it out of the reality of its life-giving environment of water, and as it flops around in the air, it might think, okay, enough already. I got the wet thing. It depends on a very specific environment to live. Without it, it dies. And without others, we flop around on the deck too. The author of Ephesians is dealing with two very antagonistic groups, each of whom thinks their way is the right way. Over and over again, in different ways, the author reminds them that Christ has broken down the dividing wall, has neutralized the hostility between them, has created one new humanity. They are told that they are no longer strangers and aliens, but built together spiritually into a dwelling place for God. And I got to say that one of the most frustrating aspects of the pandemic has been watching so-called Christians trash the whole idea of being one humanity or being built together into a dwelling place for God. It's all about me. When asked to wear masks or get vaccinated to protect the community at large, they roll out this mutant libertarian Jesus and claim some sort of divine mandate to put their needs and their needs only first. They have been so brainwashed by our individualistic American culture that they reject any action that benefits the broader community as suspect. And with a straight face, they not only totally betray Jesus' core teachings of caring for the least and the last and the lost, but call those actions evil. They can't even comprehend the idea that their lives are interconnected and interdependent with others. Ubuntu, on the other hand, is a worldview that offers a balance to that kind of rampant individualism. It offers a balance to the fixation on competition and selfishness and emphasizes the practice of cooperation. Bishop Tutu says, "A person with Ubuntu is open and available to others, affirming of others, does not feel threatened that others are able and good, for he or she has a proper self-assurance that comes from knowing that he or she belongs in a greater whole and is diminished when others are humiliated or diminished, when others are tortured or oppressed. No one can be whole as long as some of us suffer. No one can be free as long as some of us are exploited. And Ubuntu is about expanding the horizon of who we consider to be us. Ubuntu says, I am because we are. And the we in the equation is all of humanity. It's the only way the planet is going to survive. It sets before us a way of being that we can aspire to as a human race, a new level of what it means to be human. Back in the early 90s, I was at a gathering of leaders working to do what people said couldn't be done, establish a Martin Luther King Jr. holiday in Arizona. Governor Ev Mecham had just rescinded what he called an illegal holiday, which made Arizona the only state in the union without an MLK holiday. Needless to say, there was a full court press among Arizona clergy, activists, and business leaders to reverse the governor's decision. One of the organizers, my friend Dr. Paul Eppinger, came over and said he wanted to introduce me to someone, which led to one of the great privileges of my life, meeting Ms. Rosa Parks. It was just a fleeting moment, but I'll never forget it. If most people know anything about Parks, it's that she was a humble Alabama seamstress who refused to give up her seat to a white passenger, touching off the Montgomery bus boycott. What most people don't know is that she had been active in the civil rights movement since the 40s. She was the secretary of the local NAACP and had just returned from the Highlander Folk School, a training center for activists. Emmett Till and several other activists had recently been murdered, and their white killers had walked free. She had had it, and she was no shrinking violet. She knew the potential consequences and later said, "I knew someone had to take the first step, and I made up my mind not to move." She may not have known the word, but Rosa Parks embodied this idea of Ubuntu. She put herself at risk because she knew that Jim Crow was a cancer eating away at society. She said, "I'd like to be remembered as a person who wanted to be free, so other people would also be free." Now, I know we all can't be Rosa Parks, but we live in a world that still needs to see what it means to genuinely live out Jesus' call. And it's not going to be me yammering that shows the world. It's going to be your action. So over the course of the next 3 weeks, and in honor of Bishop Tutu having just passed away, we're going to look at a variety of facets of this thing called Ubuntu, this way of being that the world is longing for. We're going to look at how competition isn't the only method of defining self. Our planet can't survive if we define our identity only through competition. I'm strong because you're weak. I'm going to heaven. And because you're the wrong religion, you're going to hell. We win and you lose. There is no future in that. Number two, community is elusive and requires skill to see it. In our Ephesians passage today, the author says, look, following Jesus makes it possible to break down dividing walls, to overcome past hostilities, and despite our differences, see ourselves as one. You are built together spiritually into a dwelling place for God. Three, Ubuntu expands our horizons. Back when the PFLAG support group met here at the Fountains, I would try to drop in on meetings here and there. One night, one of the moms shared that after the initial shock of having her child come out to her, she's finally able, years later, to say, thank you for being gay. If it wasn't for you being gay, I would have stayed isolated in my own little Stepford world. But you've helped me expand my horizons and see the world through others' eyes, and I'm a better person for it. Ubuntu helps us expand our horizons. Four, Ubuntu is profoundly Christian and deepens our spirituality. Deeply consistent with the way of Jesus, it's not about upward mobility and victory. It's about gathering the misfits and the cast-offs and making what is broken to something whole. And five, developing Ubuntu requires practice. Many in the developed West have a mindset that Africa is full of backward people that need to be freed from their ignorance and idolatry, but Ubuntu is a gift from African culture that helps us put Western individualism into perspective. It's going to take practice to deprogram ourselves. Most of us know how to make a living, but we're often perplexed how to make a life. Ubuntu helps us deepen our appreciation for the importance of genuine community and a sense of we're all in this together. Jack Kornfield, the American Buddhist monk, writes, more than any other human need, perhaps more than even food and shelter, we human beings, born of human beings, nurtured and connected to human beings, need to touch one another, contact, to acknowledge our interdependence, and to see that separateness is an illusion. Ubuntu is about interdependence. It's not codependence, not socialism, not communism. No, it's an ancient, life-giving, consciousness-expanding, and mature spiritual expression of what it means to be truly human. I am because we are. When I lived in Australia, I had Aboriginal friends from the Wangai tribe, and they had an English word for themselves that they had to make up because the word otherwise didn't exist in English. You and me. In other words, you and me. Their language didn't have a word for just me. It was always us. Their culture didn't even develop a word to talk about what we think of as the pinnacle and purpose of existence. We live in a culture that idolizes the individual, that divvies up resources in ways that more often than not benefits most those who are already well off. Our whole society works to brainwash us into thinking that the world and all its people exist for our own convenience and welfare, and that our values and actions don't affect other people. Ubuntu turns that all on its head. Only when we can genuinely embrace deep down that we are all in this together, that your life and my life are inextricably intertwined, can we truly ever be whole as individuals or as a society. Jesus knew it. The author of Ephesians knew it. MLK and Rosa Parks knew it. Desmond Tutu knew it. Ubuntu. Now it's time for us to not only know it, but live it out. I am only because we are. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.